Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good morning, everybody here in Chicago. We'd like to welcome Mr. Jesse Bean. He is the Vice President of Solutions at TDI. Mr. Dean has been in the cybersecurity business for 20 years, delivering various cyber services and solutions. And Jesse, it's great to have you on the show. Thanks for your time. Let's go get started.
Oh, great. Yeah, great to be here. Thank you so much, Ravi.
Yeah, my pleasure. Now, we did some background snooping on you. We didn't do any, like, background checks or anything like that, but we looked up your bio. We looked you up on LinkedIn and did a little bit of Googling, and you seem to have a very deep and very rich background in cybersecurity. Tell us some of the highlights of your career and how you actually got started to where you're at today.
Oh, sure, certainly. It definitely has been a varied path. Because after a stint in the military, I started as a Microsoft systems admin, where my first exposure to, I guess, information assurance at the time was around GPO settings and access and account management. From there, I picked up on networking and physical security, and then moved into compliance and policy, primarily supporting the DoD as a subject matter expert in risk management, and did that for about 10 years. And then about 6 years ago, I transitioned yet again to more of an IT ops role, where I was directing and responsible for a sizable on-prem footprint, where we're helping some of our customers move some of those production workloads to AWS. And I tell you what, that's a different world, coming from compliance and audit to the fun of the ops environment, where you're always on call. I mean, that's really where the rubber meets the road. So certainly an eye-opening experience. Quickly confirmed, having been on the security, I guess, policy side, what I've kind of suspected all the time to be true. You know, an organization may have the risk assessment in place and may be on the hook for, you know, a number of compliance frameworks, but the visibility into the realities of how effective that cybersecurity program is operationalized is usually less than ideal. So that invisible systemic risk, quite a bit of it out there, you know, despite what we think maybe on the audit and compliance side. Certainly a lot of good activity out there, though, so don't get me wrong. I don't want to say that, you know, nothing's being done, a lot of good intentions, but just a lot of challenges, just a continued barrage of incidents and breaches that are making the news. So I kind of asked myself, you know what, despite all the effort and spend here, is enough being achieved? So that really brought me to where I am today at TDI. I joined about 3 years ago. I was excited to work with a dynamic company that shared the same desire to truly advance organizational effectiveness around cybersecurity. And currently I lead that solutions division at TDI, where our team has developed a commercial product that we call CNSight. That's really my path to today. Yep.
Now, you said you were in the military. Was that a cybersecurity role too? Or?
Actually not. As, I don't know, funny story, but I was a helicopter engine mechanic with Marine One.
Wow.
So out here in Quantico, Virginia.
Oh, my gosh, wow. Well, Jesse, we thank you for your service on that, you know, so thank you for your time and your service to the military in that regard. Now, is TDI a company that you've helped create, and what does TDI exactly stand for?
Oh, sure. TETRAD Digital Integrity is how you would spell out that acronym, if you will. I did not help create it. I wish. It's been around actually almost 20 years now. A relatively small business headquartered in Washington, D.C. We support commercial and government clients around the globe in areas of cybersecurity policy, compliance, security engineering, some SOC expertise, and risk management.
Okay. How big is your company, like employee-wise, office-wise?
Sure. We're around 50 employees right now.
Okay. Excellent. Now, do you have a presence in other countries as well, too, or you're just locally based in the Virginia, D.C. area?
We do, a small presence. We do have some communication securities, ComSec work over in some forward deployed Navy installations that are overseas, obviously. And then we have a big presence in the Norfolk Tidewater region as well, with our support to the Navy. And then some bits and pieces around the UK and elsewhere, but primarily DC in Virginia.
Okay, excellent. Now let's go ahead and get into your product and service line. Tell us a little bit about CNSight. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yes, CNSight. Yep.
Okay.
No, so
what
absolutely.
Is,
so it,
Can you do a deep dive into that? It's a very intriguing product. I'm at your website, and it's very, very unique. Mm-hmm. I've never seen anything like that before.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So in a nutshell, it's risk reduction through increased cybersecurity efficiency is what we tell people. And that doesn't tell us too much other than just that it's around risk reduction. But we could say that it's an automated, lightweight, executive-level dashboard that increases cybersecurity efficiency and reduces organizational risks through continuous KPI mm-hmm. visibility. So we really noticed an opportunity in the market. You have GRC products, you have integrated risk management, and you have tools for teams, you know, the boots on the ground really have their mm-hmm. pick in over 3,000 available tools to them. But there's really nothing that takes that data from the lower level and translates it into meaningful measurements for effectiveness and performance. Risk is a big category, and we do play in there a little bit, but we're not full-on risk with FAIR and all the other good work that's being done. And then we're not, say, a Tenable or a Splunk either. We kind of bridge the gap between the two to really show, like I said, the effectiveness. Because you have a security policy doesn't necessarily mean that it's being implemented in the way that it's intended to. So by offering this continuous monitoring through CInsight, it's able to essentially pull through API these existing data sources in a lightweight manner and able to provide that visibility across the enterprise. And then with that, you can quickly see, wow, you know what? We're not doing as well as we thought we were. We need to either improve our tools or our team, or maybe our processes need to be tweaked a little bit. And it really plays into risk in a sense that now that you understand truly what's happening, well, maybe you're not as in the clear as you thought you were, right? So it's really informing risk. It's really taking organizations to the next level in terms of maturity by seeing those KPIs around cybersecurity.
Okay. Now, what was the catalyst for CInsight? What was the motivating factor for creating this new product?
No, good question. So, like I said, my background is seeing a little bit on both sides of the fence, security and ops, IT ops, and then TDI's background as well. It's just that prevalent disconnect between security and compliance and just the operational realities organizational space. So this is really a universal problem. We felt something had to be done about it. And then you throw in a shortage of cybersecurity expertise. I think the latest estimate for that just in the U.S. today is close to 1 million people. And then companies continue to increase their spend. Gartner just released something in June. I think they're predicting cybersecurity spend to go down just a bit from 8 to about 2.4%, but it's still up. It's trending up. IT, if you contrast that spend, it's going down. So either way, cybersecurity continues to be something that organizations are throwing money at. This is telling, right? We have all these tools. We have budgets that remain stretched. And we have tools with, you know, promises of AI and machine learning that are getting better, but I'm not sure that they've really delivered on the promises that they've promised thus far. So we continue to see this confluence of events, really, where cybersecurity fundamentals often take a backseat to these high visibility initiatives, daily fire drills, this manual collection and reporting efforts. So to perform at the level where we're facing these sophisticated adversaries, like security leaders really need to examine and maximize their limited resources to keep their organizations in sync and fully understand the effectiveness of cybersecurity efforts.
Okay, excellent. Now, how old is this? Is this a new innovation, CInsight? How long has it been around in your company? How long have you been offering this kind of solution?
Yeah, no, good question. So it's relatively new. We're just coming out of beta. So we started with a fairly small team, our group, just a handful of developers and more of a side project. But as of about a couple months ago, we've been going out in earnest. We have a viable market-ready product. So we're really ramping up our efforts on the marketing and sales front, and we're ready to have conversations. And really, it's been pretty eye-opening in the sense that since we've just started this, we're really getting a lot of interest where people understand and they get it. It's not a lot of teaching or, you know, helping them understand what we do. usually you can see the light bulb go on fairly early, and that's a good sign. And it's a testament to some of our market research we did in the beginning and just our background at TDI, just understanding the space and what's needed in the market.
Okay. Can you tell us, without giving away too much of your secret sauce, can you tell us a little bit more about the technological architecture of CNSight? I mean, do you use like Power BI for the dashboards and other tools? Is this available in the cloud on AWS or Azure? Can you give a little bit more detail into that, please?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, some organizations essentially roll their own solution or a variant of what we've done, and that's great. But most organizations don't have that in-house dev team, or they don't have a budget for it. And it's very specific and tailored to their unique needs. So what we offer is fairly extensible. The platform itself, it's built on a microservice architecture. Like I said, fairly extensible and robust. It is offered right now on a AWS AMI, if that's preferred for a customer, if they have a cloud environment. We can also deploy to Azure. We can also deploy, and so far most of our customers have preferred an on-prem VM virtual appliance type install. So we've done that most often. We aren't available as a SaaS offering at this point. As you know, there's some hoops to jump through, and we certainly know those as a security company. But right now the demand just isn't there, and we're focused more on some of our other offerings at this point. In terms of software, SQL, I think it's MySQL, is our database or databases. There's multiple. And then HighCharts is our charting software. And then we're using Golang as our primary part of our code base. So that's really it in a nutshell. But yeah, like I said, fairly extensible platform where, you know, we're building out integrations all the time. And if you have a data source, we can make that happen.
Excellent. Now, I'm kind of surprised that you don't see much demand for a SaaS-based offering yet. I mean, it seems like, you know, AWS, Azure, virtual machines, this is all like the big hype right now. Do you think that this trend will uptick here in the near future, going into next year perhaps, or?
Yeah, I really do, and I don't know if we're talking to the right people or the wrong people just yet, but
you're
yeah,
right.
I think part of it is the type of data that we're handling. You know, customers are pretty protective of their vulnerability information and
sure.
just network, you know, architecture information, so there is a comfort level of having that on-prem control over. Certainly, if we have a FedRAMP or some sort of a SOC certification, I think they'd be okay with that, but it's we've never heard, well, this is terrible because it's not offered, you know, as a SaaS offering. But we are moving in that direction, and I think the market is moving there for something like this product. So, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, excellent. Now, who is your typical customer base like? I think before we started the show, you said a big chunk of your customers are from the federal government. Is that your bread and butter primarily, or do you try to service equally, or if not more, the private sector or the commercial sector as well?
Yes. So we are targeting commercial customers right now. So small, medium, large businesses. I will say we're staying away from the DoD space at this time and federal, just because of the requirements. We are building with security in mind. Certainly, you know, not security as an afterthought. We know better than that. But just the hurdles that you are having to go through to get those certs and reps and that sort of thing. We're focusing more on commercial space right now. And it's anything from 100 million to 2 billion in annual revenue. So it's really a broad segment in the commercial space. Not really the mom and pops or not the big banks. Usually the mom and pops outsource or have, you know, Microsoft, you know, E5, 365, that sort of thing, or don't care, or just totally outsource it. So we are working with some MSSPs because we really see a play there as well. Then on the big bank side, most of those organizations have a pretty good handle on what they need in terms of what we provide. I say the typical persona is someone who really cares about security performance and optimizing their spend, essentially someone looking to right-size their business in terms of cyber. And we're seeing a lot of that now when people are starting to make hard choices. Where, you know what, I don't need 50 tools or I don't need 40 tools. There's so much overlap here. I may even have gaps. So we're seeing a lot of tool right-sizing, and I think CNSight really plays into that where, yes, we're another tool, but we're very cost-effective, and then we help provide the data to show really what organizations get from those other tools, like how effective are they? Are they doing what doing what's intended, that sort of thing.
Okay, excellent. Now, you offer a bunch of other services like cloud services, business continuity, IR, disaster recovery planning, governance, pen testing. Can you elaborate a little bit more on these services and like which seems to be the sweet spot for you in that regard?
Sure. So within TDI, we have two divisions. My division is the solutions division, so I focus pretty much on the product side. And then we have a vice president of service delivery. His name is Eric Martin, and he oversees most of, if not all, of those other services you mentioned. I can say we are, from my perspective, we are seeing some growth in the SOC space and just security compliance and policy, just managing the nuts and bolts of a security program. An occasional pen test here and there. Certainly some of our customers continuing to move to the cloud and trying to understand, you know, the pros and cons of, you know, configurations and is it a Azure move or is it an AWS move and, you know, S3 buckets, just the usual stuff that organizations are struggling with right now. Not hard things, but it's something that needs to be addressed. So we really see a lot of traction just helping them understand the new ways to do security or how do you do security in a different type of environment or with a different type of technology.
Okay, excellent. Do you have any customer success stories that you'd like to share with us or any client testimonials?
Yeah, I think I do here. Let me think about this one for a second. Again, probably, I don't know, 20 years in business. I'm sure we have one or two we would have to, right? So one that comes to mind, since I've only been at TDI, I said almost 3 years now. What did we do? We had a difficult situation when a client approached us, or I should say they were having a difficult situation. They were heavily reliant on a third-party security team that was giving them a bit of a runaround in terms of their asset inventory and governance and vulnerability reporting. So they were kind of married to this vendor through, I guess, an arranged marriage, if you will. So we deployed CNSight and then quickly confirmed their suspicions. It turned out not only were they reporting incorrect metrics, this security provider, but they weren't fully aware of a poorly configured vulnerability scanner, which essentially rendered it inoperable for over a week. So with CNSight, we were able to demonstrate immediate visibility into the performance, I guess, or lack thereof in this case, of that MSP team and their tools. And then based on this data, we were able to talk to the client and give them what they needed to have that data-informed conversation. A little bit of a difficult conversation, but nonetheless, they had it with their security provider, and then they started to turn things around in a positive way.
Okay. Do you have any other stories you'd like to share with us or any other testimonies?
I can't name the customer. I guess I didn't name the customer on that one either. But we recently won some new work for a large customer based on some of the work we had done over the last year and a half on a similar contract for them. I guess the story there is that when we came on board last year, the organization had a lot of good ideas and were really receptive to taking the program into a new direction. And what they had inherited from the old leadership was a situation where I guess they recognized, you know, politics and that sort of thing aside, they needed to advance the program to keep pace with the threat landscape. So long story short, they rolled up their sleeves and we were able to partner with them and give them some best practices that we were seeing across some of our other customers and really have a collaborative type engagement with them to take what they saw as the vision for their program and take that to the next level. And I think winning this follow-on effort just a couple months ago is testament to that partnership and some of the collaborative ideas that we're able to share and implement together. So I certainly saw some value there and continue to do good things for them.
Okay, excellent. Now, what are you doing compliance-wise? As we know, you know, with we're going to be talking about this a little bit later in the show about data privacy, but right now, with the work-from-home things, you know, there's a lot of intermesh between home networks and the corporate networks, and so now data is more at risk, obviously. So now the GDPR and the CCPA are now the hot button, or one of the hot button topics right now, and coming into compliance with that. And another big thing that is coming down the pipeline next month or so is a cybersecurity maturity model certification, or the CMMC. What are you doing in regards to all these compliance efforts and training your clients to come into compliance with all these provisions so they don't get hit by an audit and have to pay, you know, a lot of financial penalties?
Yep, no, good question. So it certainly varies depending on which customer we're talking to. Each of them has their unique needs. Not so much for us, thankfully, on the GDPR front, but that I mean, that's not going away. I mean, it's here to stay, and it's been here, and people have felt the initial pain of that, and I think it's not quite normalized yet, but people have crossed the biggest hurdle of just having it become effective. So I think we're in good shape there from what I understand. But really on our government clients and our clients that work with the government, CMMC is certainly a big one. I mean, that's something that TDI has to make sure we're compliant with. So we were tracking it, of course, before it was CMMC. It was, an iteration of NIST 171. So we were aware of that, moving down that road with some of our customers. And, of course, that's all based from NIST. So luckily, being in the space that we're in, I mean, it's just another set of requirements, right? That's a variant of yet another set. So it kind of comes naturally to us, I'd say. So it's a process thing. It's all there. It's helping our customers understand what they need to do and how they can get there smartly. It's not throw a bunch of money at it. It's not, well, we have to do everything because that's what it says. It's let's be smart about it and work through the process and talk to them about risk and understand that not all of this has to be implemented tomorrow. What is most important? What can you afford? What are some mitigation factors that we can talk about? All those things come into play. It's definitely filled with landmines for sure. There's a lot of things that'll get you out there. We did respond to the CMMC AB's RFP request back in May, I believe, for a continuous monitoring solution. But I understand they might put that on hold for a little bit, unfortunately. But we're very interested there. We see CNSight as a very viable solution for what they're eventually needing to do once some of these organizations become certified and need to maintain that CMMC compliance.
Okay, excellent. Now, that kind of segues into another question I was going to ask you is risk management. There's been always that thinking in the cybersecurity world, you know, there's safety numbers. The more you throw out, including the kitchen sink, the better protected you're going to be. But that's actually false from two standpoints, because one, you're just increasing the number of false positives coming in, and two, you're just increasing the attack surface for the cyber attacker. So I think CIOs and CISOs are now starting to realize, ooh, we've got to do a risk assessment to kind of see where we can strategically deploy, you know, our tools to give the maximum protection and yet get a better ROI than we did before. So in other words, instead of deploying 10 firewalls, we'll just deploy 2, but make sure that they're in the best positions possible within the lines of defense. So except for CNSight, what are you doing to help companies like with risk assessments and risk management in that regard?
Sure. No, good question. It's just that people tend to, I don't want to stereotype or generalize, but back when I was doing this every day on the risk management side, it was more of a paperwork exercise where I'm checking a box. I have a BIA, a business impact assessment. I've done the risk assessment. I mean, do you really have the team? The larger organizations are better at this, but it's more of almost like a tabletop top exercise for a contingency plan. How many people really take that seriously and go through it? To those that do, congratulations, that's great. But that risk assessment is so important. That's why it's early in the overall process. Right? We're not assigning controls or or mitigation factors or anything else to things that may not be the crown jewels or may not be that important, people tend to forget about that, right? If you want to optimize your spend, it's apply those controls to the most important things or the most exposed things, or look for mitigating controls to offset some of that. So yeah, you don't need a fancy firewall for everything. Maybe you do, maybe you don't, but having those IT assets aligned to your mission and what's important to your business, understanding the threats, understanding the risk is huge. Only from there can you go smartly to applying controls in a meaningful way. So it's those types of conversations. Hey, don't just take this, you know, like a checkbox type exercise where, oh, I got to do an annual pen test, so can you just come here and do the thing? Well, no, we don't just do the thing, right? We try to help our customers understand why we do it. Do it in a manner that involves all stakeholders and gets them involved in the process as much as we can without being too much of a pain for them.
Sure. Now, obviously, there are a ton of cybersecurity vendors all over the country, all over the world. What separates your company, TDI, from the rest of the pack? In other words, why should I say, hey, Jesse, I'm coming to you to help me with my cyber problems versus the other 2,000 or 3,000? What's your unique market differentiator amongst this whole ocean of other vendors?
Oh, great question. Yeah, there's certainly a ton of us out there, isn't there? I'd say yeah. We've spent decades in the space. A lot of these companies are probably, you know, 5 years, maybe 10, but not too many can say they've been doing solely cybersecurity work for 19 years. So we really have a depth and breadth of experience that we bring to the table. And we have a number of people that have been there since that time too. So we've seen pretty much everything. And then we've spent some time thinking about the problems organizations face. And we're generally interested. I hit on that a little bit in the last question, where we want our clients to maximize their finite budgets. We're not here to take their money. And we've been on the other side, too. We have some former government and client people on staff, too, where we're not about high-pressure, aggressive tactics. You know, we simply want to partner with those organizations who want to see change in how they've traditionally addressed cybersecurity challenges.
Now, let's kind of segue over into the cyber threat landscape in general. There are a number of other hot-button topics I kind of just want to get your thoughts on. First of all is the Internet of Things. Now, to me, you know, we all know that's kind of where all the devices, you know, we come into contact every day are connected with one another. I find the IoT to be a very scary proposition because with all these interconnections, it just increases the attack surface for the cyber attacker. What are your thoughts on the IoT? I mean, do you have like a smart home or a smart car, like you clap your hands, it backs up and it goes driving for you, that kind of thing? Or?
Yeah, no Tesla yet, unfortunately. But I do have an app that does something to the car. And my smart home is, I don't know, marginally smart. I'm not super into that. But yeah, there's some concerns out there to be sure. And I think it goes back to the convenience argument, right? Where people tend to give up some privacy or unwittingly give up some security for some convenience. And it's really up to the manufacturers of these devices. And I don't know that they're doing the best job to protect us. So we're going to come to a point here eventually where people may be regretting some of their choices. I mean, it's really the same way when you talk about social engineering with all the data that's out there about each of us. That scares me too. IoT and just social engineering with the available data that's out there.
Sure. Now, another hot button topic is the C-suite. Usually the knee-jerk reaction is, okay, there's a cyber threat. Let the head of the CIO or the CISO role, we'll fire them. My opinion is, okay, let's just take a holistic approach. Let's see what happened, do a forensics, you know, examination, and then from there kind of figure out who's responsible. What are your thoughts on this, on holding the C-suite more accountable? Now, obviously, the CIO, the buck stops with them, or the CEO. In fact, I was just reading a news headline where next year the CEOs of many of these Fortune 500 companies will be held personally liable, financially liable for any breaches to their own company. Now, I think it's kind of going to a bit to an extreme a little bit, but what are your thoughts on the C-suite issue?
It's an interesting debate for sure. And yeah, I think we might be over-rotating a bit, but I think understandably, given some of the things we've seen and read over the past few years, how do you get the attention of the C-suite? because it's not just the CISO's job, right, or his team's job. It's IT, it's other divisions. Everyone needs to be part of the same team rowing in the same direction. And certainly the C-suite and the board needs to be paying attention to what's going on. They can't just, you know, look the other way. So whatever it takes to get them involved in part of the conversation, that's fine. I don't know that there needs to be punitive damages or anything like that, because that is a tall order where you can, you know, be responsible for quite a bit. But at the same time, what control do they really have other than managing a good team and managing well? And that's partly, I mean, I hate to come back to CNSight. I know this is not a marketing thing, but one of the problems, right, is how do you get that visibility into an organization, across a large organization? It's something that would aggregate data. It's something that would be able to provide a dashboard that tells you, you know what, you're not compliant with your with the terms of your risk assessment or what your risk appetite is because you're exceeding your SLA for critical vulnerabilities or your multi-factor for admins isn't being implemented like you think it is. Like those sorts of things that are available on demand across the organization, that's going to be huge. That gets people involved. That gets people on the same page. That way the C-suite's not relying on a dumb spreadsheet or a PowerPoint presentation once a quarter or once a month. That doesn't really make much sense. So having that common lexicon across the organization is going to be key. And I think whatever it takes, if it's that, if it's punitive damages, if it's something else, I don't know, we got to figure it out, because however it's working now, it's just not working. And I'll tell you real quick, there was a recent study out of Stanford University where they examined the use of management practices for productivity and efficiency. And they found that teams that had strong management practices, biggest part of that management practice, using KPIs, they far outperformed the people that had weak management practices or no KPIs. So the increase in production productivity with KPIs was up to 20% greater than an increased spending in R&D, more people, and even more technology. So you get better bang for your buck by just applying good management and basic KPI skills across the team versus, hey, I need an AI solution to fix this. And if you think about it, you look at cybersecurity as a profession, we are a little bit behind everybody else in terms of some of the other the business functions, and rightfully so, because we are relatively new. We're not project management. You know, they've been building the pyramids, or they built the pyramids quite some time ago. We're not finance, where everyone knows what EBIT is. It's those things, even sales, they have clearly defined KPIs for what success is and what failure is. Cybersecurity, you go to any boardroom, you go to any C-suite, I guarantee you those numbers are going to be different. Those metrics are going to be different. They don't know what they're talking about universally across the globe when it comes to cybersecurity. So until that happens, you're going to have this disconnect.
Wow. Okay. Now, our next hot button topic is artificial intelligence. We kind of talked about that. In fact, I just submitted a book, manuscript for a new book on AI and cybersecurity. AI is, I think it's still a kind of misunderstood term. I think it's just a big buzzword right now, a lot of hype. What are your thoughts on AI and its use in cybersecurity? There's both the good side and the bad side. So, like, what are your thoughts on that?
Sure. Well, congratulations on the manuscript, first off. That's huge.
Thank you.
So AI, I'm a little jaded. But, yeah, I mean, if you're following some of the feedback from IBM Watson, I think the people that have dealt with that aren't exactly impressed. And I'm in the same boat as you, Ravi. I'm not super excited about what I'm seeing so far. Certainly, I'm sure there's some good success stories out there, but it's not the silver bullet that it was promised to be, at least not from what I've seen. So I don't know. More work needs to be done, and it's really an algorithm, right, created by people. I mean, there's some learning components to it, but it's all code, you know, developed by people. So it's as smart as the algorithm that's in there. So until we figure that out and advance it, I don't know. I think the limitations are there, and the applicability is maybe, you know, it's not for everyone. I'll just leave it at that.
Okay. Well, are you planning to use AI for your data, for the CNSec, for collecting all the data and kind of like harvesting it and kind of segregating it out? Do you plan to use that for more automated processes within that product?
We are looking at some options. I won't tell you which ones, but yeah, I mean, certainly because AI is a buzzword, it does sell product, right? And you know, if we can say we did AI and machine learning, we'd have people knocking on our door potentially even more. But yeah, we're certainly looking at technologies that might make our lives easier and make our customers' lives easier. We haven't selected any yet, but we're evaluating, right? We haven't found anything that we like just yet. And what ZInsight provides now, I mean, there's really no need. You can do quite a bit with, you know, some basic software development work, you know, outside of the AI and ML space.
Okay, excellent. Now, the big one, I guess, is COVID-19 in the remote workforce. I mean, obviously, 1 year ago, nobody was ever thinking that this would ever happen. In fact, I remember reading the first headlines on COVID. I thought it would just stay local to China. But this has definitely changed the way we do things, and especially with the remote workforce, because people thought the remote workforce wouldn't happen for 3 or 4 years, but we saw it happen like within a short time span of 2 months. And now it's our new norm. How has your company experienced all this? How have you helped your clients? And are your workers all, you know, remote workforce also? Like, how has this impacted you and your clients? Is that what I'm trying to really get at?
Okay. Yeah, no. So TDI itself hasn't impacted us too much. We are pretty self-sufficient cyber company, but we do understand IT. So our team is remote, and it's been remote since, I guess, mid-March. And some of our work that requires on-site support, we're still there embedded with the client. So that's good. You're taking all the necessary precautions. But yeah, I mean, I don't have a lot of insight into some of it other than just the general thought that, right, the attack surface is growing. Clearly that requires a shift in priorities for IT and security. Talking to a university yesterday, I mean, they've been scrambling. They have to go, are they on campus? Are they not on campus? And their, you know, IT support function received twice as many calls as they did at this time last year. So in the thousands. So trying to help their customers, in essence, figure things out. Like, how do I connect? How do I do this? And then that introduces, as we know, you know, phishing and social engineering opportunities as well. So people, adversaries know, look, people are overwhelmed. They may not check or be as careful in screening some of these calls coming in. So it might be a little bit easier. It is easier. There's proof of that where people are starting to slip in some emails or some phone calls to gain data or even access to systems. So yeah, it's definitely been an interesting time in a bad way. For a lot of organizations in terms of yeah. Just that new footprint.
For sure. Now, another issue is cybersecurity insurance. Has TDI dealt with this with your CNSight product of customers asking about cybersecurity insurance and how they can get it and that kind of thing? Or what do you feel about that?
Yeah, so I can tell you that we've had discussions with Marsh and some of the other companies in early stages. We need to pick those back up. But yeah, we really don't support organizations with cyber insurance. You know, we have cyber insurance, and we know many companies that we work with have it. Sometimes we'll review a policy or give them some thoughts on, you know, things to consider. One of the things that excites me is, I don't know if you're familiar or if you remember that snapshot insurance tool for, I think it was Progressive or one of those insurance companies for your car, where they could monitor, you know, your driving performance. Potentially a product like CNSight, or if you're able to monitor, if insurance companies could continuously monitor various aspects. And there's tools that do that from an external look, but from an internal look, are you really doing all the things that you said you're going to do? You don't have to wait for a breach to go in and investigate. And if you are doing those things, then maybe your insurance premiums go down, right? Maybe you can save some money that way. So there's all sorts of different things out there that have potential in terms of, you know, ways to lower premiums and deal with cyber insurance. But with ransomware and the things the way they are, and you mentioned the C-suite, I think cyber insurance is going to be here for a while, and I'm not sure what we're going to do about it.
Okay, excellent. Now, finally, the last issue I want to talk about is data privacy. As I said, you know, the compliance, GDPR, CCPA, those are important now. But now it is data privacy, because now consumers here in the U.S., both customers and consumers alike, now have, I think, a greater control over what can be saved, what can be deleted, and now they have a better, I guess, authority to ask the company, hey, I don't want you to store my data. They have to comply with that. Have you come across any data privacy issues with your clients, or how have you dealt with it?
I don't think that we have. I hate to be a bummer on this one and not weigh in, but I'm not aware of any issues that we've dealt with of late, other than, I guess, just knowing that it is a concern and a growing concern for good reason.
Okay, excellent. Now, as we wrap up our show, just a couple of final questions here. What are your thoughts on the cyber threat landscape? How is it going to be evolving as we start to come into Q4 here pretty soon? And what do you think will be the biggest threat this year going into next year, perhaps?
Yeah, no, I mean, the remote workforce, I mean, that's here for the foreseeable future. So that's going to continue to pose problems for organizations. I'm still going to go with social engineering. That's going to be my pick for the future, the next 12 months or 6 months. I think we're going to see an increase in that, just the prevalence of data. We have people in flux and trying to figure out new norms, and there's always going to be people taking advantage or, you know, taking an opportunity to prey on change. So people that aren't quite paying attention or doing what they normally do, there's certainly opportunity there for people to get data and get into systems and cause harm. So social engineering, Robbie, you heard it here first, Jesse's pick.
Well, yeah, I said it. You're the first one to say that. But that kind of leads me to another question. What threat variant of social engineering is going to be, do you think? Like, is it going to be phishing? Is it going to be the robocalls, the smishing, where you get text-based messages? What do you think is going to be the more popular one, for lack of a better term? Will it be all three of them, or what do you think?
Yeah, I think email, robocalls, I mean, you name it, man. There's so many vectors to take advantage of a person, essentially. We may see some more. I don't know. I mean, TikTok, some of these other social media platforms, I'm sure that's going to continue to grow. I'm not recalling any big headlines on social media, social engineering attempts, but yeah, I think that might be something to watch out for, especially if some of these companies are outside the United States and may not be secure or provide access or rights to certain other accounts or apps on your phone. I mean, everything's connected, like you said. I mean, you have IoT and you have really an ecosystem of different applications, and you really got to trust everybody. Hopefully all your stuff's coming from the Play Store. And even then, right, there was something not that long ago that I think there continues to be a couple of stories where, you know, apps from the App Store are collecting data without consent and that sort of thing. So, yeah, it's a mess out there. I don't think we'll ever be truly safe. That's an obvious statement. But we just have to stay vigilant and be aware of what we're clicking and what we're doing. Unfortunately, that's the world that we live in.
Right. Well, finally, just as you wrap up the show here, I know, you know, every business, every individual, we all are at risk of becoming a victim of a cyber attack. You know, I've come close a few times myself. In fact, I was one a couple of years ago with some credit card fraud. Luckily, only about $200 of damages were done before my credit card company caught on it. But do you have a laundry list of items you tell your family, friends, clients, what have you, of those top few things that they should do to mitigate that risk of becoming a victim of cyber attack? Now, not how to prevent it, but how to mitigate that risk, and what should they do if they do become a victim?
Yeah, a good question. A VPN where you can, especially if you're at Starbucks. Don't use your bank card when you're shopping online. I think most sites are SSL now, so that's less of a concern. But just be careful to give away only what you need to trusted sources. Be wary of calls, you know, asking for personal information. And what would be another good one? I never give my birthday out. I don't know. I think I read something the other day. I didn't read it beyond the headline, but something security experts say they don't even disclose. But I never give my birthday out when I fill out forms online. Just one more piece of information. Yeah. And yeah, just check your balances, check your statements, make sure, look for the little things. It doesn't have to be a big charge. They start small and work their way up. So just be vigilant and common sense. And there's plenty of training. I wish I had a handy resource, but I'm sure YouTube, I find most of my stuff. And I know my kids find a lot of it on YouTube where you can learn to do and be just about anything. So I'm sure there's some good resources out there, through ISC Squared or some of the well-known security sites. But yeah, just be vigilant, use common sense. And if you don't know, ask somebody. Don't just assume and just click to click,
Right. Okay. Well, Jesse, I just have one last question, I promise. The Zero Trust framework. I've written a bunch of articles for these on clients. It's another big buzzword. What are your thoughts on the Zero Trust framework? Is it as great as it's hyped up to be? Is TDI going to be implementing that? Or what are your thoughts on that?
Oh, that is a good question, Ravi. Yes. Let me think here. So I think it has potential. I don't know how it's implemented in practice. That's not where I'm strongest. But the idea that you have maintaining, access or controls, in theory, that's good. But I don't know. I don't know the space well enough to really comment on that one, unfortunately. But I've heard of it, and I know it's been a key topic for a while. I just don't know what the latest is. We're not getting a lot of asks for it, or it doesn't come up in our conversations at all. So that tells me something, I guess, without telling me something.
Okay, excellent. Well, Jesse, we thank you for your time this morning, and have a great weekend. Have a great Labor Day weekend. Hopefully you can get some good R&R in there, okay?
Yeah, I appreciate it, Robbie. You too. Thanks again for your time.
Yeah, we'd love to have you again on a future podcast. Have a good weekend.
All right, great. You too, Robbie. Thanks. Bye.